Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 307 of the Roguecast, recorded September 29th, 2020. Gamma Shenanigans. So we are a man down this week.
Yes.
And a woman down as well, because Anna was sick, and so we didn't have anybody to cover the front. Or sub in, and that's how we usually get everybody in here.
So Nick was consigned to being a clerk.
That is correct. Nick is consigned to being a clerk.
While we live the bougie life back here without masks.
Yep.
And we're drinking bootleg whiskey.
Yep.
And
monocles.
Like smoking Joker. Havana cigars.
Yep, smoking cigars.
I don't even like cigars, but I have to because I'm in the office.
I certainly. This bootleg whiskey is disgusting, but, you know, what are you going
to
do?
You got to have something to put your cigar out in.
Yes.
Yes, well, we're short Nick today, so it's just me and you, Randy. We're having a Marvel team-up.
Yes. I don't have any gaming news in particular, except to note that we did get the Isle of Cats game back in, and it's a six-player expansion.
Yep.
Been wanting to play that game. It was super hard to find for a while, and now this is a new reprint. So it's one of those that at some point I will play if I ever get to play board games again.
Have you ever tried the things like the virtual tabletop?
No, I have friends who play it, and I'm a board. I want to play board games.
Yeah.
I want to play out a video game.
Yeah. My brother did Arkham Horror LCG did like a sort of virtual. It was like a tournament the other week.
Okay,
and it worked well for him. Like he enjoyed it. So there are options out there, but obviously it is not quite the same.
It's not ideal.
Yeah, it's not ideal. Hopefully those games will happen again, and you can play Isle of Cats.
Yes,
because I know you love cats.
I do love cats and isles. All right.
I will only play it if it's Jellicle Cats. I love Jellicle Cats.
There should be a cats board game or a role-playing game.
It probably should be.
Dave, this is your next Fate game.
You know what they should do is they should... I want something where, like, you have to draw a card almost like, you know, Cards Against Humanity style.
Yep.
And you'll get, like, two topics and you have to combine them and sing a verse or two from a song.
Let's 100% do this.
All right.
No, I seriously, now I want a cats Fate game where there's musical... where we have to sing.
You know I'll do it.
You know that the musical role-playing game is my...
It's our Holy Grail.
Yes, the Holy Grail. That was
very difficult to do. Nobody can just like sing a song like a full song. But you could probably workshop a couple of lines from a song.
I want a musical game.
Yeah.
I did play in high school. My friend made up a game based on the Blues Brothers.
That's crazy.
And we were a band, and we were different genres of band. And I remember one of my friend created a song on the spot called "She Was Naked."
Oh, nice.
And it's a good song. It was fun.
That's pretty good.
We had a good time with that game. So it is possible to play the musical game.
All right, let's keep this in mind.
Yes.
We'll talk about this more off mic.
All right. news. There's some interesting news this week. First of all, the Rogue One series, which I forgot was happening because, you know, time isn't real anymore.
Right.
But the Rogue One prequel series featuring Cassian and K2SO.
Right.
With Diego Luna and Alan Tudyk. Is still moving forward on Disney Plus. It apparently had a showrunner. Stephen Schiff has been set as the showrunner. He's the producer of The Americans, which, by the way, great show.
That is the
current showrunner. So what happened is it was greenlit, and it was going to be run by Henry Gilroy. I think Henry Gilroy.
Okay.
Because the movie was made. It was supposed to be made by... there's a whole bunch of names. Let me go back. It was made by Gareth Edwards, who did Monsters and Godzilla. Lucasfilm didn't like it. They brought in Tony Gilroy to retool the film. He made all the reshoots, all that kind of stuff. And then he was supposed to be running
the TV show,
along with Americans producer Stephen Schiff.
Yeah.
Apparently... he took over a showrunner earlier this year, and then they just announced that Toby Haynes, who is best known for directing the Black Mirror episode USS Callister, will in fact be the showrunner of Rogue One. However, this does not seem to be like the troubled production stuff. This is more of a... Gilroy is based in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
Haynes is based in the U.K., and with COVID, they're not doing much filming in the U.S. right now.
Oh, interesting.
And I wonder if we're going to see more of this kind of thing.
They're going to have to export all of our our film industry
yeah.
out because we don't want people to die. Wow. One more way in which inept management of this may have completely wrecked the country.
Oh, yeah.
We'll add in the entertainment industry. Yeah. I like that episode, the USS Callister episode.
Yeah,
I didn't, love it, but it was good. It was a good episode of Black Mirror, kind of different from what they usually did. For people who didn't see it, it was their spoof of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And involved a kind of, what would you say, was he kind of like an incel-ish boss?
Yeah.
And kind of narcissistic scumbag who portrayed himself in a virtual world that was like part of the almost like a next generation MMO where you were where it was very virtual, and he portrayed himself as basically the Captain Kirk role and forced other people to be like subservient to him and to play roles on the bridge,
yeah.
and or less the horrible things happened to him, a little bit like the kid in the Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah,
I mean, and this one has a somewhat happier ending than some Black Mirror stuff,
yeah.
And was fun, and I theoretically they were supposed to do a spinoff of that too.
Yeah.
But whatever the case is, as long as it's not as troubled a production as Rogue One had, which led
yep.
to a kind of a Frankenstein movie,
yeah.
I'm down with it.
Dave, neither you nor I are super huge
the biggest
Rogue One fans.
Fans of Rogue One, yeah. Which by the way, other than maybe no, I think that's it's beyond a shadow of a doubt, except for Mandalorian as a TV show. It is, I think, the most universally liked of the movies,
mm-hmm.
which are, most of them are a little kind of split decision for people, especially the last two. But Rogue One seems to have a quite strong following.
Yep.
And I don't know why, because it's dumb.
Yeah.
has poorly drawn characters in it. But
it does have a cool robot.
It has a cool robot. It has some cool action scenes. I've come to like it more over time.
Same.
I don't know what their get the rebel plans thing. I couldn't explain the plot if you asked me to.
They have to go to a jungle planet.
They have to go to a jungle planet and get the plans. But the method by which they get the plans out of that giant carnival machine with the claw is it's like a video game where I would be like, wait, what do I have to do to get the thing next?
But Dave, there's a jungle planet in AT-ATs.
There's a jungle planet
and there's a cool force monk.
Yeah, and there's a cool force monk.
And there's a sassy robot.
Yep. And the characters all die, and that makes it serious.
Yes. Anyway, neither of us are huge Rogue One fans.
Listen, I've warmed to it.
I have too, but yeah, there's some...
I actually really love the final scene with, Cassian and Jin
yeah.
On it.
Yeah.
I like that they don't have to do the kind of full-on cheesy kiss in the end sort of thing, but that it is a we-are-going-to-die moment,
yeah.
and I enjoy a well-portrayed version of that.
So... Do you have any interest in the prequel, I guess?
Yeah, I actually had more interest in this than Mandalorian on the basics, on the surface level, because Mandalorian was one more bounty hunter type story, and I'm just kind of sick of those bounty hunters and assassins and
mm-hmm.
stuff. Because I guess Dave Filoni and...
John Favreau
are such talents, and they like really just know what they're about. They nailed it, Mandalorian, so well that... Honestly, I don't know how the Rogue One prequel could live up to it. Are they going to have any role in this?
I guess that's the important thing. I was just looking to see if he was listed. He is not listed as a writer on it.
Uh-huh.
He is a producer, but he's a producer on everything.
Yeah.
So, I think he was a producer on Rogue One. He's not. I'm sorry. He's not even listed as a producer on Rogue One, the TV. That's not good.
No, that makes me a little nervous. In my best case scenario, it's very tonally different from Mandalorian, but does some of the same things as Mandalorian as far as, like, dipping into the universe, but not being, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, you know when they introduced the This Is the Way Ugnaught guy
mm-hmm. yeah.
that he played? There wasn't a lot of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. They kind of revealed him through his actions, through the script. He was a character that was a good character and not just a, oh, it's an Ugnaught. I remember Ugnaughts.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I think it has to, that's the one thing that they have to get right, or I will not watch it. But I assume this will be kind of, in its way, more morally ambiguous. Cassian
oh, yeah.
was supposed to be the kind of, you know, the spy who would do what needed to get done, kill
it. That's the part that interests me.
Yeah.
And they need
to kind of embrace it.
Here's my pitch.
Yeah, hit it.
Rogue Zero is a Baby Yoda 2. We know what works. Let's just have a Baby Yoda. It's Cassian and K2SO and Baby Yoda 2 having adventures.
It's going to be like, I don't think the baby liked that we had to kill those five people to cover up the evidence.
No, Baby Yoda 2 is a psychopath.
Thanks for using your force powers to help us cover up those five deaths, Baby Yoda 2. I'll get behind that.
Yes.
What other topics do we have?
That went weird. Not as weird as the announcement of, fuck, it's Peacemaker on HBO Max.
Yes, that's the name. There's a piece, kind of to surprising everybody, I think.
Yep.
James Gunn, director of the next Suicide Squad movie for DC, revealed, I think, on Twitter that he was, producing?
He's probably in a producing role. I don't know how heavily involved he is, but they're doing a show based on the Peacemaker character played by John Cena.
Right. And he's going to be in Suicide... That's going to be a character in Suicide Squad. And the show is going to be on...
HBO Max.
HBO Max. And so this will be a prequel series or mini-series, essentially?
Probably. Maybe his origins. I mean, Peacemaker had a whole series in the 90s.
Yeah.
He's like a crazy super soldier.
He's a Charlton character.
Yeah.
He was, in fact, the loose basis for the comedian in Watchmen.
Yeah.
So
you can actually do some sort of Captain America riff on.
Yeah,
it
he's basically like supposed to be D-bag Captain America, mm-hmm. kind of like U.S. Agent.
Like U.S. Agent,
but different. He's got a helmet.
He's got a helmet.
But so that's pretty different.
If you told me John Cena was playing a U.S. Agent, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yep, and the title, which is accompanied, by the way, like by a very sort of poppy piece of like comic book art, just showing him with his weird helmet, is. Suggests the, what do you call it,
Batman 66 kind of vibe?
Not quite Batman 66, just that it will have that kind of, probably something of the tongue-in-cheek vibe of like Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, right. We always knew his Suicide Squad would at least somewhat approximate.
Yeah.
There's a word I can't think of, but just means that he's not taking it all too seriously. It actually suggested to me The Boys, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which is to say, it was going to be R-rated humor.
Yeah.
And probably violent, so...
I mean, it's of a piece with what HBO Max has done with Doom Patrol. Which is to say, adult, but kind of fun and
irreverent was the word, by the way, I was trying to get.
And very true to the characters. Like, that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to do Peacemaker, we've seen his... He's got the costume. He's wearing the helmet.
Yep.
Like... They are not shying away from it, which I think is the thing that gives me hope for DC going forward, is like, don't shy away from your characters. Don't do the black leather thing.
Right.
Give me characters.
Right. Well, in the same way that Guardians of the Galaxy, we were talking about this the other week, that in all the of Marvel's like 22 main movies in the MCU, that Guardians was probably the biggest chance and also the one that most opened up the door for them. So, like, you know, a lot of the Thanos stuff that followed but also Captain Marvel and all these other things.
None of that would have worked if Guardians hadn't worked.
Yeah, if that hadn't worked, if they hadn't shown you that the cosmic universe can be done without making the grounded adventures of, like, characters like, whether it's Ant-Man or Cap getting kind of, like, in gritty sequences and stuff like that. Like, those on Earth need to be able to work, but you also need to, like, in the back of your head, you should know that there's space empires out there.
Yep.
And Star-Lord walking around singing, you know, pop songs on other planets and stuff.
Yep.
And Rocket Raccoon and all that. That stuff had to work. So if they can do that with DC, embrace it, let it be a little tongue-in-cheek when it needs to be, but, like, embrace the weird... Find what works about weird characters like Peacemaker and Hyena or whoever they all have in there. It could be a really good thing. Like, James Gunn could be the most important factor in the new, like, in new direction of DCU.
What's kind of funny is that as a result of right-wing troll scumbags, James Gunn basically got kicked out of Marvel for a little while, and DC immediately snapped him up. Now, he could be their guy. He could be their Kevin Feige, their guy, or their Joss Whedon, basically, their guy running their universe. But unfortunately, Marvel came to their senses and already hired him back for Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Yeah. So I don't know what happens if this is a huge
fortunately hit. For Marvel, unfortunately for DC.
Yeah.
Maybe. Do we know if he is going to be contractually obligated to leave his new DC pals behind?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I
guess we'll find out.
It may work. So what I want to know is, how involved is Zack Snyder in all of this? Is he back on...
Because
I'm pretty psyched for Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I look forward to this. And then there's other bit of news I want to talk about, which is the Black Adam casting news.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just looking at Black Adam just to see if there's any info on producers like to see is Zack Snyder listed as a producer, and he is not, which is good.
I think they just, honestly, I think they want to wring what money they can out of the Snyder Cut thing, and they're almost like they're publicly, like, it's like they're acting like he's back in their camp.
Yeah.
But I think he's not.
They're trying
I think
to get it's the just Snyder fanboys on board their past stuff and then move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, and I'm glad, because Zack Snyder's a poison on DC. Because they confirmed Aldous Hodge is going to be playing Hawkman in Black Adam. Now, Aldous Hodge is in Invisible Man. He was on Leverage. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
He's great. And
he's a hunky good African American actor.
Yep. Also, there was an adorable The Rock posted the like phone call that they had.
Yeah, he called to tell his co-star, soon to be co-star, that he got the part.
And Aldous Hodge is like, "Who is this really? Stop messing with me."
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And by the way, that's a kind of Marvel piece of advertising, viral thing like that. We were talking about this off mic that. Hawkman, who's going to play some supporting role, but since he has his origins very in the comics, sometimes in space, but sometimes in ancient Egypt, and it sounds like they're going to do the Egyptian thing
probably
in this.
Probably so, yeah.
That there will be a tie because, of course, Black Adam comes from the mythical land of Kandak, right?
Yeah.
Which is a stand-in for, like, Iraq.
Yeah.
They just don't want to, like... They didn't want to use... DC uses A, fictional cities, and B, a hotbed of turmoil like Iraq is maybe not the funnest place to drop into a real comic, or drop into a comic.
And also, Geoff Johns did a lot of... When he sort of established Black Adam as the way he has, and as more of an anti-hero than just a villain...
Right, almost this Namor-like monarch who was, like, egotistical and brutal, but kind of honorable.
He did all that fleshing out in the pages of Justice Society, and then... they did a Justice Society story where they time traveled, and he had him, like Black Adam was alongside a version of Metamorpho and a version of Hawkman, and he basically did all that. So if they're using that as a basis, which would make sense, that makes sense to sort of tie in Hawkman of ancient Egypt with the that period and that place of Black Adam.
Yep, and I think Dr. Fate famously has his Egyptian ties and could also be worked in there in some way, whether it's actually him or just the power of the Naboo or, you know...
Also, tying a reincarnated character into an immortal is a smart move.
Yep.
So he'll probably play the old version and the new version, I would guess, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Flashback to it, we'll see.
If, we've seen a little... Not a lot, but a little bit of a tumult about, you know, Hawkman, traditionally a white guy, now a black guy.
Yep.
And I'm like, if you're going with the Egyptian origin, I feel like all this is doing is course correcting the fact that they had to kind of whitewash him from the beginning.
Yep.
Just like all those old biblical epics depicted everybody in the Middle East as a white dude. Everybody was Yul Brynner and, you know, Charlton Heston. And I'm like, give me a break. So really, I don't see this so much as, they changed it because they're woke, as they course corrected something that was probably kind of... really obnoxious about like 50 or 60 years ago. You know, more than that, maybe.
What's interesting is I haven't seen a lot of blowback on this. I know it's out there, but maybe I don't have a lot of those people in my feed.
To be fair, Hawkman doesn't exactly have the strongest following either.
Right.
I am the biggest Hawkman fan I know.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm still only a moderate Hawkman fan.
Yeah.
You and I both love Hawkworld that John Ostrander did.
Yeah.
And like I like bits and pieces of other stuff, but he's never been... He's a character I want to like.
That's where I am, too.
And I'm always... And I'm braced for this to be one of the interpretations I'm into.
Yeah.
So here's hoping.
On the Marvel side of things, there are strong rumors that Samuel Jackson is going to play Fury for a Disney Plus series. No details. Jackson's attached to star. Kyle Bradstreet is attached to write and executive produce.
Okay.
I don't know who that is. There's no comment yet, so it's clearly still working out the deals. A Nick Fury series could definitely fix a lot of what was done on... Carl Bradstreet wrote for Mr. Robot.
Okay, it's pretty notable.
And Copper, and whatever, a show called Berlin Station that I've never heard of.
Okay.
Oh, and he's executive producing the Alice Isn't Dead TV series.
Oh, okay. I mean, that sounds like some good stuff in that mix.
Yeah, so...
You know me, Randy. I, on all Marvel shows, it's like I need to see one of them first and see, like, hopefully how good it is.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's good.
Yep.
But until I see that it's good, I'm like, any one of these, like they don't as a whole sound appealing to me.
The other thing is, I've always wanted more Fury. Like, especially when they did Captain Marvel and showed his younger Fury, I really loved that.
Yeah.
But, like, we know Nick Fury in the comics. We know his origins. We know that he was a World War II soldier. He was a commando. And then he became, like, because of his nature, he's almost the first legacy character in a lot of ways. He became the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. And Fury, when we were introduced to him in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he's basically just a spy. He's the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then in the Captain Marvel, we get this introduction to, oh, okay, so he worked with, like, the CIA and he was a spy.
Yep.
But, like, we don't know a lot of his backstory. And I want to know some of that.
I guess they have done the digital legwork of getting, you know, a young version of Samuel Jackson, mm-hmm. and they did it really as seamlessly as I've ever seen done in that movie, in Captain Marvel. So what I would do if I were them would be to not maybe make it like a every episode thing, but pepper it with flashbacks.
I agree.
Go ahead and use that tech. They probably got the budget for it. And again, they've probably done a lot of the major heavy lifting, I think.
Yeah.
I know it's expensive probably, but it seems like it would be an obvious thing to do. Fill in some gaps. Build out Marvel's history through his eyes, the history of the MCU.
I would like to see some of the early days of S.H.I.E.L.D. with him on board, because we've seen bits and pieces of Agent Carter and the... I would like to see how the SSR became S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And some of that stuff. I would like to see a little more... Basically, I'd like to see the S.H.I.E.L.D. history not filtered through ABC and Jeff Loeb. Because I feel like you could do a lot of stuff, and Fury is the guy to do it with. But they might just do... He's not really with S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore. He's like his own independent operator at this point. So they could just do an older ex-spy. Like, who knows what they're going to do with it.
Rain, I got a suggestion for a name for the show.
Yep.
Fury, motherfucker. Just a thought.
Yeah, good idea. Last but not least... Oh, actually, there's two more things. One is that The Boys is getting a spinoff set in college. I don't know what that means. I just know that I love The Boys show.
Is there a teen superhero team in it?
No, not that I've seen as of yet.
Okay. And that was a thing in the comics, although I don't know how large a role they played. So I guess it's an opportunity for what? Young, pretty actors to be horrible people?
Yep.
I've heard this show has been pretty good lately.
It's really good. I'm loving season two so far. So
yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited about a spinoff of The Boys. I was telling you before we recorded this that I am such a fan of the show, it's made me want to go read the comics, and I'm pretty sure I won't like them. But I want to know more about this world.
Do you think you won't like them because Garth Ennis, while he has some sophistication, will go too juvenile and stuff like that
He hates superheroes, and I don't.
Right. Like, he's like... not just wanting to use them as, like, a metaphor for the United States or foreign policy or just, like, some cultural element he does or doesn't like.
He also wants to...
But he wants to humiliate them. Yeah. He does want to do that.
Which is so weird, because he wrote one of the best Superman stories of all time in that Hitman issue.
Yeah. Well, as we know, Superman is, like, his one exception because he embodies the best.
Yeah.
And for some reason, he's able to take that and not look at it with... really a cynical eye.
Right, which is weird, because Superman is a guy who needs a cynical eye in a lot of ways. I mean, you want to be idealistic, but really, if you want to talk about the character who could be problematic, Superman's definitely got that.
Right, toxic positivity could be like how he is. Interesting.
Well, and he represents, I mean, he is like truth, justice, the American way.
Right.
Like, it is...
Time to change up that slogan, Supes.
He's like a co-opted immigrant as much as anything else, so it's like,
right.
You can definitely look at Superman through a jaded eye. I don't want to, but you could.
Well, if you do end up reading The Boys, we will have to hear a report back from you and on the comic.
Finally, the last bit is they released the trailer, or the teaser at least, for War for Cybertron Earthrise.
The second season, like just six episodes, of the what will be a trilogy of CG Transformer stories that we talked about the original one.
We all loved it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it was like truly an homage to the original 1984 Transformers cartoon. But, like, kind of with everything a little smarter, a little cooler in hindsight. Just as a random example, the show started with Wheeljack and Bumblebee making this, like, kind of like out on a mission in the back alleys and streets of Cybertron, just like the original cartoon did. And only there's kind of a fun reveal that Bumblebee, instead of being the kind of idealistic, you know, almost... poster boy for the Autobots that he usually is like a free agent who's like, all right, I found what you wanted, pay me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of fun. And it's not like they tried to subvert him with every turn.
No.
They just kind of wanted to throw some spins on things here and there. And all their spins were pretty interesting and fun.
Agreed.
So this new one is, I guess, their path to Earth?
Yeah, because they're not actually on Earth.
Yeah. And among other things, like, they... What is it? You see Megatron talking about how he thinks that what Optimus did, like, destroyed the Allspark?
Well, yeah, he thinks the Allspark's destroyed, and that means the planet's going to die.
Right. And there does... I don't know how much action there's going to be on the planet, but we know there were Autobots left behind.
Yep.
And the sort of the big thing is that the mercenary company, I think it's them, of the Wreckers, known, I think, primarily through the comics, but maybe in some of the various versions of the cartoons, are going to play a heavy role in Season 2.
Also, it looks like Jetfire. Is Jetfire or Skyfire?
Shit.
I can't even remember. Anyway, he has fully gone over to the Autobots and is being a badass.
Yes. He activated his energy sword and like sheared off the front of like one of the Decepticon Seeker planes.
There's
which
some
was
cool
pretty dope.
Action scenes. We see Red Alert.
Oh, yeah, Red Alert. They're like security specialist who was like, it was like a Lamborghini, but like, you know, looked like an emergency, like ambulance colors.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like he's going to be playing some role. He was out running some like depth chargey looking bombs that were like bouncing around that looked cool. This is primarily an action trailer, but it's kind of primarily an action series.
Yeah.
Anyway, it all looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
And even though I couldn't tell you who most of those guys are in the Wreckers, when they get their big pose shot of like 10 or 12 dudes standing there with their weapons and gear and stuff like that, I'm like, oh, these guys are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and the character I really liked in the first season, who was like a Decepticon who got saved by Ratchet and had a change of heart on things. His name was Impactor, and it looks, at least Nick has told me, I think, that in the comics and other stuff, that he becomes the leader of the Wreckers, and so hopefully we will witness that on the second season.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I am a mild, at best, Transformers fan, but this definitely hooked me. I really liked it. All right, we're going to take a break for a second, and we'll come back and talk about comics for the week. We're talking Comics League of Wednesday, September 30th. Wow, I've lost track of all days.
Is tomorrow the 1st, then, of October?
No, tomorrow is the 30th. Because we're recording this on the 28th.
Aha.
But the day after that is the 1st of October.
We're finna hit August. It's cool outside.
Yeah.
It's, we actually got cool temperatures and some winds and things like that. You know what I like about it best, by the way, just real quick, is that the humidity dropped down. And, like, I normally couldn't open up my house when it's cool, like, if it's, like, 80 or 90% humidity, because it becomes a nasty swampland.
Sure.
But I can if it's 30% humidity.
You know what I like about it? It will be gone in a few months. It'll be warm again.
Randy, now you like some 70-degree temperatures.
I can roll with 70-degree temperatures, but here's the thing. Sometimes when I leave the house at this period of time, I'm in shorts, and my legs get cold.
Yeah, you're like, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you got to pants up, son.
And sometimes, in this time of year, I leave house in jeans, and I'm all sweaty.
It is a conundrum, isn't it?
I don't like it. I'm just saying, if it was always 75, it'd be perfect.
First world problems. actually, the first world is experiencing some horrible problems right now.
That's actually true.
All right, but let's talk about comics and take our mind off of those things.
Yeah.
There's some cool stuff this week.
Let's start with Image's book, The Department of Truth, which I think they've definitely got a lot of belief in. They're working hard to sell it. And
it's written by James Tynion, who, aside from like writing a lot of stuff for DC, most notably recently Detective Comics, and for Image...
Batman. He's writing the Joker War stuff.
That's right. He's writing the Joker War stuff currently. But his big indie book recently was Something is Killing the Children.
Something is Killing the Children.
Something is Killing the Children.
Our favorite title ever.
Our favorite title and a good book to boot. Like, it's a legit good suspense kind of supernatural story. And it's found an audience. Who puts that out? Boom?
Yes.
Yeah. So now here he is making the rounds, and he has come to Image.
Yep.
Now, Randy, the sign I made for this made it, like, just going on their solicit made it sound like it was some kind of suspense, thriller-type story about conspiracy theories. And I didn't quite know what they did with it, but when you told me, I was like, oh, that's very interesting. Can we say what it is without ruining the reveals in the first issue?
Yeah, so this is it is a conspiracy book to some extent. It starts with this female agent bringing someone in who it seems like maybe he's a journalist, I think, or he's a teacher at Quantico.
Okay.
And he's a guy who looks into like right wing white nationalists talking in their online communities. They share memes and conspiracy theories and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So it's a little bit of QAnon adjacent, basically.
Right.
And he's being interrogated by these two agents, who they don't tell him what agency they're from, to tell him what happened when he like went to this like flat Earth convention.
Okay.
And it is all about that, and about sort of him falling into this conspiracy world, and then there's a big twist at the end as to who these people are. And he's going to be working with them, and that is the Department of Truth. I don't want to give away the twists, because I think it may not even come about in the first episode. I've actually read in advance. I've read three issues of this.
There's some kind of fascinating reality-bending strangeness, yep, and stuff like that. So it is not just, I guess I would say, it's not just some book that's like, oh, isn't it crazy? Conspiracies, man.
Right, no.
It is not like, how cool are conspiracies? How cool is Alex Jones? How cool is QAnon or anything like that?
No, it is more, and it's not just about debunking them either. It is more about the nature of reality. It's a little Morrisonian.
Yeah, that
fits. If you like some of the Invisibles and some of that stuff,
it's about who
runs the world and that kind of stuff. And it's a great first issue. It is all sort of closed-room interrogation stuff. It's got this really
Those can make very good readable first issues, I think. Or issues in general.
This is a really first issue. Like I say, I know where it goes, and I'm pretty pleased with where it goes. But also, it's got this artwork that reminds me a little bit of Dave McKean or Ben Temple Smith.
Yeah, if anybody ever saw, like, say, who was it? John Bolton's art is a weird call, but his artwork on the first issue of Books of Magic, but also Dave McKean, yeah. And the way he drew figures and the Arkham staff, if you've seen Red Arkham Asylum from Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
That is the kind of vibe it is, which is pretty impressive looking.
Yeah, it's a really good first issue. Like I say, I know that it goes on. Image has been on a pretty good hot streak lately with new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely recommend people check this out. I know there's... Well, Dave, you mentioned Batman 3 Jokers number 2 is out this week, and that's sort of a notable thing.
Yeah, and, you know, I am neither the biggest Geoff Johns fan nor the biggest fan of sort of the Black Label darker stuff, but I've been reading it. Geoff Johns is one of those guys who is a naturally talented storyteller. Yep. I say naturally. I'm sure he worked his ass off at it.
No, he was born that way.
Who can write a compelling story. And if you remember how, like, as disappointing as overall Infinite Crisis was, that first issue with Blue Beetle, and we hated that he got killed in it, but it was a grabber. Like, and
that wasn't all Geoff Johns. That was also Ruckin and Morrison and Wade.
That's true. But, like, if it had just been him, I would have believed it. He can write a grabber first issue.
It's true.
And I felt like the first issue of Three Jokers accomplished that, even though I found its sort of tone, which reminded me of Batman the Killing Joke. If you had done that as a three-issue miniseries, that kind of... that's what it totally reminded me of.
Okay.
But essentially, this is a story that is... It's, in a way, it's asking a question I don't know that anybody had, but that has something to do with the various... the different interpretations of the Jokers over the years.
Yeah.
And that first issue revealed that there do seem to be, in fact, three Jokers representing different eras of Batman. The kind of conniving killer planner of the 1940s. Mm-hmm. The failed comedian of the Killing Joke, who was also like the one who beat Jason Todd to death.
Yep.
And what was it? Oh, and I think they did differentiate between that and like the
modern day face ripping.
The modern day, yeah, like sort of serial killer face ripping one.
Did he rip faces or did he get his face ripped?
Or actually, God, I'm not sure if that was the case. Maybe it's like,
I don't know.
Yeah, now I'm slightly confused on it. But anyway, what is presented here is a dark mystery. With a pretty edgy vibe to it, but it reminded me also, you know how in the Arkham games they go pretty dark, Randy?
Yeah, but it's still fun.
It's still fun?
Yeah.
I don't know that this is like... yeah, but you know how Batman himself is not fun? He is serious as a heart attack.
Right.
Well, he and Barbara Gordon and Red Hood are all at the front and center of this, completely focused on them and their investigation into these three Jokers.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's a fascinating almost moment-to-moment over the course of a few, just like a night or two so far, that has some creepy reveals, some big stuff happens, honestly. And in this second issue, I'm trying to remember, like, sort of what the biggest event in it was. Every single one of them has something notable that happens. Yeah, there's nothing I can actually say without giving away too much. Other than to say, I don't still know what the big reveal will be about the Jokers, but watching... Johns is using it as a way to talk about the nature of Batman, the nature about how he failed or didn't fail... who's Red Hood?
Jason Todd. Yep.
To how, whether he failed or didn't fail Barbara Gordon, how she overcame when the Joker shot her, and how that does or doesn't compare to Jason Todd's own ordeal.
Huh.
Like, it's actually become a fascinating discussion between them, and there's several of those moments that are kind of like Geoff Johnsian moments where you're like, oh, that was a good line. Oh, that's an interesting character insight. Just like in Green Lantern Rebirth.
Yeah, he's always got good moment-to-moment stuff.
Yep. The art, is it Fabok? Is that who does it? I don't actually have a copy in front of me.
I don't either, but I believe you're right. I think it's Fabok.
It is actually so detailed, it actually straight up does remind me of Brian Boland's work on The Killing Joke.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't know if I'm going to end up happy with this story overall, but I can say I found it consistently compelling. It was a big page-turner for me, and I enjoyed it. In some ways, much more than I thought I was going to. If you can get into its headspace, it's a really good time.
Okay.
So I recommend folks checking it out if they haven't already given it a shot.
There's a couple notable one-shots from Marvel. They did some interesting thing this week. So they're doing another Immortal Hulk. They've done a few Immortal Hulks lately. They did Immortal Hulk number zero. They did Immortal She-Hulk.
Yep.
And they're basically letting other people sort of handle it. This one is one of the early ones first one's written by somebody else.
Would you say that all of these are characterized by the slightly horror-tinged, darker turns of the Immortal Hulk run?
For sure. And this one definitely has a horror vibe to it. This is Jeff Lemire,
uh-huh.
who is a favorite writer of the store.
Yep.
And Mike Del Mundo on art, doing sort of a very beautiful painty style. And it has...
This feels like a fit for Lemire, who can veer dark in his stories, but also loves superheroes.
this is as Lemire as it gets, because he goes to a small town.
Oh, man.
And there's a 9-year-old girl who's gone missing named Rebecca Green. And he's like, yeah, Green. And Banner is like going to investigate this. And he finds this sort of experimental farm and talks to the dad and gets accused of basically kidnapping the girl. And there's gamma shenanigans going on.
Uh-huh.
It's a good one standalone. Lemire does love writing his like rural towns.
Yep.
and this is all
he's
about
good
that.
At it.
It's a good standalone story, and it introduces a character. I'm like, oh, we could see that character again. I bet that would not surprise me at all.
I heard that Gamma Shenanigans was the title of the Hulk sex tape.
yes, yes, that's correct. But I liked it. Immortal Hulk is one of my favorite books of Marvel right now.
And these one shots have managed to be good and not dilute the brand.
Yeah, for sure. Then there is the sort of strange giant size X-Men number one tribute to Wheaton and Cockrum, which is not tying into the giant size X-Men they've been doing. You know, the one shots that were like a story that Hickman was telling.
Now it's essentially the script and like panel layout and all that of the old giant size X-Men number one that introduced Wolverine, Storm, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Sunfire,
new X-Men,
and Thunderbird.
Yep.
And also notably featured them going up against the sentient island of Krakoa. So in that sense, it's timely. It's a way to flash back to this story that introduced Krakoa, the living island.
Yeah.
But it's drawn. Every page is drawn by a different artist. So.
Yep.
Dave Cockrum, of course, did the original, and I think they stick to his layout.
To some extent, I've read it enough times that it looks familiar, but they may have changed a few things.
Yep. And there's such a variety of styles in here. You might get a little whiplash from the style. I noticed most of them are some stripe of realistic, but there is one kind of cartoony
one. Was in there.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of good people here, like Alex Ross is the first page, Kevin Nolan, Chris Samnee, Marcus Tu, Bernard Chang, Takeshi Miyazawa, Phil Noto, Chris Anka, Lanil Francis Yu.
Yep.
Jen Bartel, Mike Del Mundo, Marco Cicchetto. Like, it is a who's who of people working at Marvel.
Yep.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a weird curiosity. I'm like, the story is a little dated, but I have a huge fun.
Right,
for
everybody
it.
Is kind of still talking the way characters did in Bronze Age comics in the 1970s.
Yep.
But they're kind of drawn in a modern style. Anyway, I think it's going to do well. I think people are kind of going to enjoy the strange novelty of it. So, I think people should check it out.
Yeah, it's worth a look. And then Marvel also has a new number one with multiple covers. This is Shang-Chi number one, which was to tie into the movie, which I thought that movie wasn't coming until 2021 anyway, but maybe it was originally supposed to be this year?
Maybe.
I don't know. But basically, this is it's written by Jin Lun Wang, who's done New Superman over at DC.
Yep.
He's done a lot of comics for Second. He's a really good writer.
Yeah.
He did Superman vs. the KKK.
He's got his bona fides.
And I was excited about him doing Shang-Chi, even though I am not what you call a huge Shang-Chi fan. Although, I guess given that I own all of the hardcover omnibuses, maybe I am a huge Shang-Chi fan.
At least more than the average guy.
He's a fun character. Shang-Chi, people don't really know like what he is. I mean, basically he was basically a Bruce Lee from Enter the Dragon brought to Marvel at the time.
But he was a spy too.
He was a British super spy whose father was Fu Manchu?
Yeah, as originally written before Marvel had to like drop the license for legal reasons.
Yep.
The old Sax Rohmer pulp villain, who was like a beloved, like the archetype of a villain, as well as no doubt an Asian stereotype of the like sort of warlord, master planner, cunning Asian villain.
I don't know how much of this was going to be in this. Like, I don't know if
almost like if James Bond was the son of Blofeld.
Yeah,
is kind of how it works.
I wonder if this is based on the script that was for the movie, because it does feel like a Marvel Cinematic reinvention.
Huh.
So this opens with a 5-page story retelling the tale of the Five Weapons Society, which is the new version of Fu Manchu's like organization.
Yeah,
introduced basically there are five warriors who are heads of the like schools of martial arts, like hammer, sword, fist, whatever. And then there are two mystics, the Sorcerer Brothers, Master Zheng Zhu and Master Zheng Yi, who rescue these five weapons from being executed by the Emperor. And then Fin Fang Foom shows up. So like they were there to defeat Fin Fang Foom.
How is Fin Fang Foom treated?
Seriously, he's a deadly dragon.
Okay. Sometimes they kind of take him tongue in cheek, but that's cool.
I guess it is blade, daggers, staff, fist, and hammer are like the five weapons. And I guess the deal is that basically the warriors served under younger Master Zheng Yi and elder Master Zheng Zhu, and then after the original five and the younger brother died, Zheng Zhu developed a longevity spell so he could continue guiding the society alone. And slowly defended China against threats from over the centuries, but decided he was a genius and wanted to become a ruler. And then Shang-Chi is his son. So Zheng Zhu is the new Fu Manchu, but he was like a master mystic and warrior.
Right. It would almost be as if the Ancient One from Doctor Strange had gone bad, right?
Yeah,
had like kind of become a little bit obsessed with power.
Or like a, you know, one of the characters from Hidden...
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Thank you.
Yeah,
that kind of the warrior monk mystic type.
Yeah, yeah.
And he basically was corrupted by immortality and power, and it's an interesting take. And I'm like, oh, and they do that in 5 pages, which again, just like how in Black Panther movie they get Wakanda and all that stuff in just like a quick story.
Yeah,
they could easily get this in, and now he's got a supporting cast and villains. Like there's a battle between the various factions of the five weapons against who will lead them. And they think the spirit of their ancestor...
That's interesting. So 5 factions, that means something a little more complex than just the good guys and bad guys, right?
Yes. But they are all... Well, they... It seems like the factions are mostly, like, bad guys. They're all these warriors.
Okay.
But Shang-Chi is, by default, the head of the fists. And
So we're going to get some warring martial arts schools.
From beyond the grave, the indication is that the head of the fist is supposed to be the new head of the organization, and the head of the hammers is not a fan of this move, and she decides to go to San Francisco and basically take him out.
Interesting. That sounds pretty cool. I want to check that out.
So that's the first half, and the second half is all about Shang-Chi being in San Francisco, being a modern-day guy. They reference his, like, hey, you were a hero for hire, and an Avenger, and a spy, and like, so it's still the same character.
Okay.
But they're, like, blending it together.
They just
with
kind
the
of, yeah, they maybe worked in some other details and kind of, sounds like kind of unified his history.
So there's a blend of spies and martial arts. They've reinvented his father in a good way. They aren't throwing away his history, but they're sort of streamlining it. It feels like an MCU take.
Yeah.
Like, if this were just an adaptation of the MCU movie, I'd be like, yeah, this makes sense and I want to see more of it. It's a really good first issue. The art by Daike Ruan, maybe? I don't know the name. It's a new, but really nice. Yang is a really talented writer. There's some fun stuff. The character stuff is all good. The action is really good.
I wonder if they're just kind of lining it up with what the movie is going to be so that it's reflective of it, but maybe not, you know, this exact story.
That's what I'm wondering. But I also know it's possible, like, this is so far out. This could just be, like, Yang doing, like, a, hey, I wanted to do Shang-Chi, and here's how I would have done it.
Yeah.
But at any rate, it's really good. It reminds me of, if you were to sit down in the theater and then presented this to you, you'd be like, even if you weren't a Shang-Chi fan, you'd be like, oh, this character's cool.
Yeah.
And that's all I really wanted.
Yeah, that'll be the challenge. That's the Ant-Man challenge, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Dave, there was another DC book we were going to mention, which is the Batman Joker Warzone.
Yeah, I haven't read this, but I mostly want to mention it just as kind of a notable issue this week. It's an anthology one-shot that's set during the Joker War thing, where... As a basic premise, my understanding is that it kind of involved Joker, instead of doing his, like, it's always a game with Batman, I'm going to kill him. And this deals with, like, you know, full-on war in the streets. He has also, like, taken over Wayne Enterprises' fortune, so I guess he's got some financial backing.
Oh, good.
Maybe Batman's going to finally become not a billionaire.
Interesting.
I hadn't thought about it, but that could be a net effect of this.
And the Joker being a millionaire psychopath makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. There's also the Clown Hunter gets introduced in this. And there's a notable, something I had heard about, kind of rumored about, a change for Poison Ivy. Kind of a new persona she takes on. I guess I don't want to spoil anything.
But it's interesting, because this is almost like a first appearance kind of thing. It's a big change for her.
It is, and I think that... honestly, I think this issue is going to have a little bit of value because people will have not expected that it's going to be a sort of notable thing. By the way, James Stokoe did one of the backup stories, Randy. It's the Clown Hunter story, no less.
Okay, that makes sense.
It allows him to draw kind of like all the, you know, crazy mean streets of Gotham stuff and do kind of colorful gangbangers like, that look like the Warriors.
Yeah.
And, yeah, have some fun with it.
Clown Hunter, by the way, we made fun of the name, but he feels like a Casey Jones type character.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be like Casey Jones running around beating up Joker and his dudes in the DC Universe.
In the video game, which we would play.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
then there was No More DC, which is the Wonder Woman 84 special.
Yep. I don't know if any of us have read this yet
It's an anthology, right?
Is it? I think it's actually maybe just two stories.
Okay.
And I think it is, like, essentially adjacent to the events of Wonder Woman 84.
Right.
Obviously not pivotal plot stuff. It's not going to be about the big bad. But I think it's, like, sort of some little side adventures with her in 1984. Yeah. And since the movie is delayed, this is kind of probably the only taste you can really get right now.
Right.
It
also has an awesome variant cover.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And then the DC also had the Lola Woods hardcover, which is the second of the...
Joe Hill's horror comics.
Yeah, the Hill House comics.
Yeah.
We all like these.
Yeah, every single one of them has been good. This involved... Two like teenage girls who like wake up in a theater, literally no memory of the last few hours, and the creepy truths about their town, which has like an almost Silent Hill-ish vibe to it, and about like whatever their missing time meant, what it means to them, and I'm looking forward. I think I will probably be picking this one up. It seems like very good Halloween reading.
Yeah. And then there was, I want to mention Marvel's...
In honor of Nick.
Yes, he's
our dearly departed Nick, who's in the other room.
Yes.
I just want to mention the second part of X of Swords, a.k.a. Ten of Swords. Mm-hmm. The second part came out this week in X Factor. These all have a very unified look, and in fact the X Factor title is itty-bitty on it, because it's going to be like the X of... Ten of Swords is really what they are selling this as. The books most of these books have become, the X books are part of this crossover. And there's, but it is only like one or two a week for the most part. So it'll kind of go through it pretty quickly.
Nick will probably talk about this more in next week's podcast, but he did say he said
it was a really good second issue. And I know this has its kind of like both like fantasy elements because of the mystic lands that are from Excalibur showing up in it, as well as what I believe to be Mortal Kombat-ish elements in a sort of war between the realm things that may have some formalized dueling with the swords. And that sounds like a pretty fun connection to me.
It does.
So, yes, Nick, since you're not here, we recommend this on Nick's behalf.
And last thing I want to mention is Stranger Things Science Camp, number one. I have not been reading the Stranger Things comics. They're all by Jody Houser, I think, and I generally like her stuff. But I didn't really need more Stranger Things. This one in particular, it is about Dustin's science camp between seasons 2 and 3.
Yep.
How he meets his girlfriend. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of fun. It's a light enough week for me. I can read this. And it's actually really good. It is, he goes to this science camp. There are sort of science bullies there. And he's like, how can this be a thing? Because he's flashing back to his... Clearly, Jody Houser has watched and knows the Stranger Things. Like, she references some notable things from...
The bullies in the first season?
The bullies in the first season.
Yep.
And Dustin sort of shuts them all down in a smart way. He doesn't physically bully them, but he basically makes them look dumb. And he's like, yeah, tough guy bullies hate looking weak. I figured smart guy bullies would hate looking like morons. And I'm like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I like that. Now, here, let me ask, as far as I know, nothing like sort of supernatural went down at that camp.
But it did, Dave.
What?
There's some kind of murderer or something. It looks like a Friday the 13th kind of thing going on.
Oh, that's fine. That sounds like a blast.
Yeah, it's the first issue's a lot of fun. They introduce some new supporting cast, so he's got his own like crew around him. He maybe gets talking to running some D&D. It's a fun issue and reminds me of what I like about Stranger Things. If you're missing your Stranger Things fix this Halloween,
yeah, we got to know what happened to Sheriff in Russia.
Says it's not till next year, right?
I know. I think that's the case. I don't even know. I think they had to stop mid filming, so who knows when anything's happening.
So if you're jumping from Stranger Things, this is good timing on Dark Horse's part, which is rare because usually they can't keep any of their licensed stuff in print. give this Stranger Things Science Camp a look, and maybe check out the trades. I know there's a couple other ones. There's one that talks about Eleven's like. One of the other psychic powered persons.
Yep.
And then there's a couple other ones that go into different stories. So, yeah, fun stuff. That'll do it for us this week. We have movies and TV we're going to talk about next week. I think mostly Nick and I have been keeping up.
Yep.
Dave just watched the same 70mm print of The Godfather over and over again.
Yes, I just cannot get enough of it. It makes me so hungry for the pasta.
Actually, I believe it is it's your VHS tape of Extreme Prejudice that you watch over and over again.
Listen, that is a fantastic movie. Nick Nolte's Finest Hour, him versus Powers Booth. They were raised as friends as children. They became, one went and became a lawman, one became a criminal.
Yeah.
And they both fight for the same woman on the Texas border of the 1980s against the backdrop of CIA intrigue.
Meanwhile, I am busy watching Avengers Endgame every week.
If you when you finally get around to seeing Extreme Prejudice,
I will at some point. Yes.
You'll say like, I'm throwing Avengers Endgame into a rubbish bin. I don't need it anymore. I've got all I need. This bucket of testosterone from the 80s.
Maybe one of the 100 streaming services launches will finally have Extreme Prejudice.
Probably so. It's gonna be on Disney.
All right, but that's it for us this week. Thanks for tuning in. Until next week.
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.